This week, we're talking with a super lawyer who handles cases related to divorce, child custody, child support, protective orders, and paternity. Stay tuned as we explore the law and relationships.
How's your lunch?
Good, Dad, but not as good as the sandwiches you used to make.
Really?
Sure. Remember how you'd melt the cheese first and dry the pickles on a paper towel so they didn't make the bread soggy? Oh, and then you'd cut it into four pieces with no crust?
I did all that.
Jeez, Dad, how would anyone forget something like that?
You never know which moments will be the ones they'll remember forever. So take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 1-877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Welcome to Frank Relationships, where we provide a candid, fresh, and frank look into relationships with a goal of acceptance, respect, and flexibility. I'm Frank Love, and you can find me, my blog, and my various social media incarnations at franklove.com. Let's start with introducing you to my co-host, Dr. Gail. She's a psychologist who found out that there was some guy mouthing off about relationships on radio, and she figured she'd give him a run for his money. We'll see if I can keep my feet under me as we go at it today. And this week's high-powered guest is attorney George Golem. He's been practicing law over 20 years. During that period of time, he was deemed a super lawyer in the Law and Politics and Baltimore magazines from 2007 to the present. He's rated as high as possible by his peers for his legal and ethical abilities in the Martindale-Hubbell Directory. He's the chairman of the Legal Continuing Education Committee of the Maryland Bar Association, has offices in Baltimore, Columbia, Owings Mills, and Bethesda, and he's admitted to practice in Maryland and D.C. His acumen includes counsel related to divorce, child custody, child support, protective orders, paternity, as well as many other issues. Ladies and gentlemen, it's my pleasure to welcome Attorney George Golem. Welcome, and thank you for being on the show.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here. I'm no longer the chairman of the Continuing Legal Education Committee of the State Bar. I was that for many years. Now somebody else has that responsibility. But otherwise, thank you so much.
All right. Got it. Well, let's get started. First off, how do you suggest that two people who are about to be, shall we say, legally bound, I call that having a child or getting married, how do you suggest they, what are the first steps?
Well, I think complete honesty is important, as in all relationships. If they're contemplating getting married, I think it makes a great deal of sense to make full disclosure of all their financial assets. In other words, each person knows exactly what the other person has. And then, at least in Maryland, and my comments, you know, are related to Maryland, although I don't know if other states are any different. In Maryland, it's probably a good idea to have a prenuptial agreement. And the reason for that is this. No matter how much in love the parties think they are, and no matter how convinced they are that the relationship will last forever, and I hope for their sake it does, nevertheless, they cannot say at the time they're married how the other person will be behaving 5 years down the road, 10, 20 years down the road, and just in case that it doesn't work out, that the other person, you know, starts misbehaving or behaves badly, it's a very good idea to have a prenuptial agreement. As to how to go about doing it, I think it's important to consult with a skilled attorney in their own jurisdiction, because that lawyer will know what the legal requirements are in that jurisdiction. Typically, though, these agreements will provide for what will happen in case of divorce. What will happen as to the assets of the parties, and what will happen in terms of waiving certain rights. Because under the laws, at least to this state, and I imagine most states are pretty similar, a wife would have certain rights upon the death of her spouse, or a husband upon the death of his spouse. And so typically these agreements would take that into consideration. So they need competent legal counsel to help them with that. And I think that makes a lot of sense. You know, because no matter how great the person seems at the time you're marrying them, and hopefully or having a child with them, but especially this is geared toward people contemplating getting married, but no matter how great the person seems then, you have no idea how they're going to be some years down the road, they may change. Here. Probably will change.
Hear, hear.
Hi, Mr. Gollum. This is Dr. Gale. How are you?
Fine. How are you, doctor? Very nice speaking with both of you.
Thank you. Likewise. So it sounds like you, in your opinion, prenuptial agreements are not negative. It kind of sounds like you think it's a good thing for the marriage.
I think it's a good thing if it's handled correctly. For example, I know of one couple who the negotiations over the prenuptial agreement became so adversarial and so unpleasant that the honeymoon was ruined by one party's regret over concessions that person made in the prenuptial agreement. They just argued they wound up arguing on the honeymoon. So I would say it's like everything else. You know, you have to do it with respect for the other person. You have to do it in a reasonable way. It shouldn't be done just before the wedding ceremony, because I'm thinking of a particular couple, they did it just before the wedding ceremony. It was unclear whether they were actually going to get it finished in time so the couple would get married. So get that over with first before you well ahead of the marriage ceremony. And look, you know, if the two people are so unable to reach a reasonable agreement without feeling, you know, that they've alienated each other, they hate each other, you know, then they probably shouldn't get married anyway, you know?
Sounds like a man who's read my book, and it hasn't even hit the shelves yet. The book is How to Gracefully Exit a Relationship. And, Attorney Gollum, I want to read you an excerpt from a blog that I wrote some time ago. It's called Chris Bosch and Allison Mathis, Having It in Writing Might Have Helped. Well, here it goes. After my current mate and I had been dating for a while, we moved in together and eventually had children, but didn't get married. I had been divorced once, and the process was so long and unpleasant that I decided I'd rather remain single, at least on paper. However, our state recognizes common law marriage, meaning that if we lived together long enough, she could be considered my wife for all legal purposes. If we were potentially going to be legally bound, I wanted everything, all legal and moral expectations, obligations, and plans clearly written. And neither of us wanted the courts to ever decide what should happen to our family. We wanted to do that for ourselves in advance. So, my wife and I drafted a written agreement that covered everything from what would happen to our children in case of death or divorce, to how assets would be divided, to fidelity. I wholeheartedly believe that an agreement of this nature should be written when a couple is about to take a step in a relationship, again, that could result in the parties becoming legally bound. So, Super Attorney, what are your thoughts on this, having the expectations, not just what would happen if you split, but the expectations of each other written?
Oh, I think that's good. And I think maybe a way of trying to reduce the bad feelings is to have each side have a lawyer, each person have a lawyer. I know that's going to cost a little more money, but in the end, it's better, because if the two people are haranguing each other, well, I'm not going to give you, you know, $30,000, don't you think I'm worth $30,000 if the marriage breaks up, you know, and or whatever the figure is. That by itself can be alienating. On the other hand, it can cause alienation. On the other hand, if you're working through lawyers and the lawyers are discussing it between themselves, you know, maybe that could help to make it a little less unpleasant. And so I think it's a good idea. You know, my mom used to say that sometimes the expensive way is the cheap way, meaning that what looks like it is expensive in the short run is actually cheaper in the long run. And since a divorce case is so incredibly, it can be terribly expensive, unfortunately, unless the parties work things out and settle quickly, it might be better to spend the money at the beginning hiring lawyers to work on the agreement and coming up with something that's mutually agreeable, rather than face having to go through, you know, a miserable experience in a divorce case later on.
Now, it's my understanding that even if the two parties don't both have attorneys, it's possible the agreement can be thrown out in court later on the grounds that one party didn't know what they were signing. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's possible. It could, or one person, you know, can say that the other person was fraudulent somehow in the representations they were making. You know, like one person can say, "Well, I thought he had, $100,000 in savings, and it turns out, you know, he only had $40,000, or he had $150,000. He misrepresented to me." So, yeah, I mean, whenever you're going into court, you can never be sure what the outcome is. We lawyers, we don't know. You know, when the judge announces the decision, then we know, or a jury. So, sure, there's always that possibility. And I've run into people who've had prenuptial agreements, and then it turned out it was a fight in court later on as to whether the thing should be enforceable or not. So when you pick out a lawyer, try to find somebody in your community who really knows what they're doing. Like you, for example, I think mentioned Martindale Hubbell. That's a great source. Typically what I do when I have clients who need a lawyer out of state, is I have them consult Martindale Hubbell for a lawyer in their community who's highly rated. My personal experience with that is it's been very good for my clients. No guarantees. You know, anybody can make a mistake no matter what their rating. But nevertheless, you increase your chances that you'll be happy with the outcome if you get a lawyer who's highly rated in Martindale Hubbell. So, yeah, you're right. It can be thrown out in court. That's a possibility. Nothing certain when it comes to the law.
You're listening to Frank Relationships with Frank Love. We're talking to Super Attorney George Gollum about family law issues, which include divorce and other separation matters. Before we go any further, would you tell our guests, would you tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you?
Oh, sure. Thank you for asking. All right. Well, they're welcome to give me a call. I'll give them my cell phone number. That's the easiest number to reach me, which is 443-653-0340. My practice is limited to Maryland. Or they can call me at my work phone number, which is 410-385-5261.
Thank you.
This is Dr. Gail again. I was wondering, in your opinion, would you think your clients or persons attempting to get married, should they take any marital classes or include in the classes, should they take divorce classes or know about divorce laws prior to getting married?
Well, I haven't seen any divorce classes, but I think realistically that people should go into this. First of all, they should be very careful who they pick as their spouse. Second, you know, what you want is someone who's kind, someone who's smart, someone whose values are similar to yours. You know, I think all those things are important. Obviously, you want to feel like you're compatible physically. That's important too, of course. But all these things are factors. But I think you also go into it with the idea of, I hope this works out. I'm going to try very hard to see it work out. But I have to know going in, given that 50% of the marriages in the country are in divorce, that there's at least a possibility of divorce. And so, you know, go into it with your eyes open in a realistic way, hoping it lasts forever, but understanding that it might not, because so many of them don't.
I'd like to get a little nosy, if you don't mind. And I want to know, why do you do what you do?
Well, here's the thing for me. What I really, I'll give you the accurate answer. We have a certain number of years on this earth, and we don't know how many years that's going to be, okay? So each of us has to decide, in accordance with our own values, how we want to spend this time. For me, I love helping others. You know, that makes me feel like my life is wisely spent. So it happens that I know family law in this particular state, and it happens that I know how to try a case. So I figure, well, this is as good a way of helping people as others. On the other hand, for other people, you know, they make their own decisions as you know, what makes life meaningful for them. So that's how I picked it. It's something that I feel like I can be helpful to the people in my community. It's very emotionally rewarding. A lot of these cases are about helping babies. You know, like I'm in court a lot on child custody cases where the issue is to try to keep both parents involved in the lives of their babies or young children. And, you know, that makes me feel good.
I watched a judge some time ago in court talked to a mother, and the mother said, the mother was trying to get the father involved with the in the life of the child, and the judge said, well, miss, we can't force a man to be involved in the life of a child. How, tell me about the cases where you are working to make that happen.
Well, you see, usually what I see, of course, what the judge said is absolutely right, at least in this state. Usually what I see are cases where both people, both parents, or even sometimes a grandparent, wants to be involved in the life of the child. And sometimes what you see is one parent is trying to push the other parent out of the life of the child, or to make it a very minimal involvement. And so my job in those cases, you know, whether I'm representing the mom or whether I'm representing the dad, you know, who wants to be involved in the life of the child, is to see that the child, you know, has reasonable access to both parents. Because, you know, as I heard a social worker say in a court one time, studies show that it's better for the child developmentally if both parents are involved. And that would be my, you know, impression from my own childhood, you know, where I loved having access to both mother and father. If one, but you're right. I mean, if one parent doesn't want to be involved, how can you force them? It's a free country. You can force them to pay child support. That a court can do. But I don't see how you can force a person to be involved in the life of the child if they just don't want to.
With regard to child custody, do you think that it's better for the child if they are with the parent with the most money or the parent that is most involved?
I think it's better if they have very good access to both parents. You know, I don't think that money is the be-all and end-all. You know, there's plenty of people from poor families who had extremely happy childhoods. So it's not just money. And as far as involvement goes, you know, they're children from families whose father work long hours, but they love their father anyway, you know, because they know the father is specifically working to help that child have a better life. Part of the reason they work. So I think it's best for a child to be with two parents who love the child and who want to care for the child and see that the child has a wonderful life. That's the best thing.
This is Frank Relationships with Frank Love and Dr. Gale. We'll be right back.
The internet is a wonderful resource for kids. But in times like these, the internet can also increase your child's risk of being a victim of crime. Instruct your child to never give out personal information, like their name, address, or school name, without your approval. Teach them about frauds and scams that often appear as friendly emails or offers that are too good to be true. Place your computer where you can see what your child is doing. Use software that prevents access to inappropriate sites and chat rooms. Teach your child what to do if they come across such sites or receive solicitations from strangers. Learn how they're using the internet and how much time they're spending on it. Let's keep our kids as safe in the cyber world as we try to do in the real one. Visit ncpc.org to learn more about how we can protect our children. That's ncpc.org. A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
We're back, and we're talking with Super Attorney George Gollum about family law. Okay, the question was a moment ago about whether money or time should be the determinant on custody. How do you think the court generally sides?
Okay. Well, in this state, and you know where I practice in Maryland, the test is what's in the best interest of the child. Now, that's, you know, as one court decision said, it's like a guess, and it is like a guess. But that's not a bad test. I mean, it's a good test if the courts are trying to figure out what's in the child's best interest. But usually, you know, assuming that you have two law-abiding people and two people who love the child, usually it's to have both parents involved. You know, neither one should be excluded. I mean, a child may spend more time with one parent, may live with one parent, and the other parent has visitation. But, you know, as long as they're two good people, the child should have a substantial amount of involvement with both parents. Where things get tricky, I have a lot of clients who are from out of state, but their cases are in Maryland. And so one of the interesting problems that courts have to deal with is what do you do in a circumstance, for example, where the parents on the west, one parent's on the west coast, one parent's on the east coast, or some other substantial geographic distance. But the courts do the best they can to, like, for example, in one case, you know, they have daily Skype visits, you know, were ordered, which makes a lot of sense. And they also have children going out west for part of the summer, you know, where the, if the child lives in the east, do something for holiday visits and so on. So one thing that's nice is there is some degree of creativity in the system, both from the standpoint of the courts issuing orders and from the standpoint of the parties trying to negotiate things. If the parties can work things out, I think it's better. I've seen psychological studies which say that children are happier if they know their parents have agreed on something, and I think that's true. You know, if they know mommy and daddy believe this is for the best, you know, I think it makes them feel better, the children feel better.
Are there any general biases that you notice in court orders or rulings that you are party to?
Not really. I think the judges regard things like custody, for example, and children as among the most important things that they do. You know, they know that children are so vulnerable. And, you know, as I heard one judge say, well, you know, the medical malpractice cases get a lot of publicity, and the criminal cases get a lot of publicity. But of all the things we do, you know, which this judge was suggesting, taking care of children is might be the most important or one of the most important. So I don't think they're biased. I mean, I think they try very hard to do what's right. They're much happier if the parties can reach a settlement. There's no doubt in my mind about that, because after all, the judges don't know these people. You know, they don't know what the particular, you know, ins and outs of their lives are. And if the people can reach a settlement, it's so much better. There's a range of what's reasonable in these cases. And if the two people can reach an accommodation, great, much better. But as far as bias, I really haven't seen that. You know, I think they try to do the best they can, the judges, to do their duty to carry out the law, which is, in the case of child custody, for example, is to do what's in the best interest of the child in this state, in Maryland. And as far as divorce goes, in this state, this state is one where it's equitable distribution of marital property, meaning fair distribution of marital property. I think they do the best they can. Now, sometimes I agree with them, sometimes I disagree with them, but I don't have any doubt as to their sincerity.
Let's back up a little bit. You said that you are all for premarital agreements.
Mm-hmm.
Where do the parties begin? If you're advising a client, do you start with the statute? Do you break out the statute and go from every and address every piece of the statute, or do you start somewhere else?
Well, here's what I would say to somebody. And again, this is in my state. I can't speak for other jurisdictions. They may have totally different rules. But in my state, what I would say to people is this. I say, look, you want an agreement where you increase the likelihood of it being enforceable in court. No one can guarantee that any agreement you enter into will be enforceable in court. I can say to them, look, but you want to increase the likelihood. So one way of doing that is first have complete financial disclosure. You know, if you have any securities, show them to the other side. Show the statements. If you have any bank accounts, show them to your, you know, to the other party. And look at theirs. Then I say, it would be good if the other person has an attorney, because that way, you know, they feel like, you know, it's not a one-sided thing where one person has a lawyer and the other doesn't. And in fact, what I would do is I would actually write to the other person and tell them they should get a lawyer, because I'm not going to be representing them as an attorney. I can't represent both sides. You know, I just did a mediation in a divorce case, and that I can do, you know, where I'm a neutral and I'm not for either side. But for purposes of doing an agreement, I think I would write to the other person and say, I think you should get a lawyer so you can get the best possible advice. And then once they've made full disclosure, then it's a question of entering into an agreement that's fair. And each person has to figure out what's fair given their circumstances.
With the financial disclosure, suppose the parties are working working right up to their paycheck. You know, they don't have any money. They're broke.
Mm-hmm.
Do you still suggest an agreement?
Yeah. And the reason I would suggest an agreement, and they should still have financial disclosure, even if it's that they have no savings, and that's okay. You know, a lot of people are there these days, an awful lot, probably tens of millions. I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case, or virtually no savings. I still think it's a good idea because even though they may have no money when they get married, you know, if they're fortunate, you know, some years down the road, they may have a substantial amount of money. And so it's wise, I think, at the beginning to make provision as to what you're going to do in case the marriage ends, you know, in case, you know, you no longer like each other anymore, which obviously happens plenty. So, yeah, even if they have no money at the beginning, you know, I still think it's a good idea to spend what they do have, you know, a modest amount, what they can afford, on hiring a lawyer to help them do an agreement, because it's much cheaper than fighting. You know, let's say they get rich, let's say they're lucky, and they get rich down the road, it's still much cheaper than having contested divorce litigation later on.
So other than money and finances, what are some things that you think couples should discuss prior to marriage?
Well, I think they're values. You know, what's important to you? But I think they need to do that with humility, because time itself will make changes, you know, in their lives, substantial changes in their lives. And so no matter how much they talk things over, and it's good to talk things over, anything that's important to them is good to talk things over. Nevertheless, the passage of time and the change of circumstances can someday lead to situations that they would not envision at the time when they got married. You know, sometimes people get nasty over time. Sometimes people decide they, you know, they're going to commit adultery and they don't care what the other person says. Sometimes people will take a job that places them at a great distance from their spouse, and that can cause bad feelings. So all kinds of things can happen, and but you talk over what's important to you at the time that you get married, and you hope for the best, and if it works out, great. But if it doesn't, you know, you accept that philosophically and say, well, that's, you know, that's life.
You're listening to Frank Relationships with Frank Love. We're talking to Super Attorney George Gollum about family law issues, which include divorce and other separation matters. Because before we go any further, again, would you tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you?
Well, thank you. Yeah, my name is George Gollum. I practice in the state of Maryland, and my phone number is 443-653-0340 and 410-385-5261. And as I say, I only handle cases in the state of Maryland. So, thank you.
Now, what if two parties can't afford an attorney? Now, I am completely clear that it's more expensive to get divorced than it is to have an attorney at the beginning. But there are plenty of people who, even given that information, being clear about that, will say, hey, I can't afford an attorney, even when before we're getting married. Your thoughts, what do they do?
Well, you know, we all make decisions on what we're going to spend our money on. You know, some people will spend it on a vacation. Some people will spend it on, you know, the movies or whatever it is. But even if I just think, if you want to save yourself a lot of hassle, potential hassle down the road and tremendous expense, I would say go find the money. You know, it's not that I'm trying to drum up business for lawyers. I'm really not. I mean, if I thought you shouldn't do it, then I would just say don't do it. But I'm saying that it can be such a substantial savings down the line that it's a worthy investment. You know, it's like there used to be a car commercial, which is like, pay me now or pay me later, with the implication was if you pay me later when I fix up your car, it's going to be a lot more expensive. Paying divorce lawyers is going to be far more expensive. Now, I have to add something. I was at a committee meeting of the Family Law Committee of the Bar Association of Baltimore City, and a judge there reported that in that court, 91% of the cases, people have no lawyers. So for a lot of people, they get divorces or child custody cases with no lawyers. So it's not like everybody gets a lawyer. On the contrary, many people of limited financial circumstances have no lawyer. But in terms of what I think is best, what I think is best is to go out, find the money somehow. You know, it may not cost a lot of money. I hope it doesn't. And have somebody draw up an agreement so that you avoid greater expense down the road. You know, I once heard Alan Greenspan say that fire insurance may not seem like the most efficient use of money until you have a fire. Similarly, hiring a lawyer to do a prenuptial agreement may not seem like the most efficient use of money until you have a divorce, and then it'll seem like it was a very good idea, hopefully.
What is the average cost of an attorney to acquire an attorney or retain an attorney?
I have no idea is the truthful answer. It can vary from community to community throughout the country. It can vary depending upon how experienced the lawyer is. Some lawyers charge less, some lawyers charge more. So there is no, you know, one amount that I could cite. And obviously when someone is looking for a lawyer, what you want to do is what they want to do, I would think, is combine competence with something that's affordable. But I think it's money well spent, personally. You know, I just sometimes people will say, well, I don't want to do it because it's not romantic. I don't think it has anything to do with romance. You know, the romance is there, otherwise you wouldn't get married. Hopefully it's there. But just in case it doesn't work out, you know, just like you buy life insurance, you don't want to die, but you buy life insurance to protect your family. Similarly, you buy this to protect your finances down the road.
This is Frank Relationships with Frank Love and Dr. Gale. We'll be right back.
I grew up in an all-white neighborhood.
I grew up in a diverse neighborhood.
Everyone I knew was just like me.
Brought something different to the party.
They looked like me, thought like me, acted like me. So my neighborhood always stayed the same.
They introduced me to different tastes, different ideas, and different ways of doing things. So my neighborhood always got more interesting.
They definitely helped shape the way I look at things.
And they prepared me for the future.
They did?
They did.
A neighborhood rich in diversity can leave its inhabitants better off and more able to succeed in the global community we and our children will face in the years to come. To better understand the full range of benefits offered by neighborhood diversity, please log on to aricherlife.org. That's www.aricherlife.org.
I want my kids to live a richer life.
A message brought to you by the National Fair Housing Alliance in celebration of the 40th anniversary of the Fair Housing Act.
We're back and we're talking with Super Attorney George Gollum about family law. You just noted that you buy life insurance when you don't really want to talk about death. And it's a perfect point. We also have wills, and many of us don't have wills. So there are wills to be created that many of us don't want to deal with. But death comes when it wants to, and sure, often we're unprepared. I see the two very similarly.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's a matter of I agree with you. It's a matter of prudent planning. There, you know, my view is you want to live as long as you can. There was an author named Joseph Conrad who said, I want to live till I die, meaning I want to really live. You know, I want to enjoy my life, you know, until the inevitable comes. And so what we do as sensible people is we hope for the best and we try to live for the best, but in the meantime, we have to plan for the possibility that unpleasant things will happen. And we hope they, you know, they won't, in the case of a divorce, you know, getting married, we hope it'll never happen. And in the case of doing a will, we hope that death will be far, you know, long, long away, long, long time away. God willing, hopefully it will be. But still, you know, you want to plan because you're an orderly and well-organized person and you want to approach life's problems in a reasonable way. You want to approach life's problems with wisdom.
You've been practicing for 20 years now. I am sure you've seen some bizarre things. Tell me about one of the most bizarre cases that you've ever seen.
Well, you see all kinds. I mean, actually, quite a bit longer than 20 years. You hear all kinds of things. I mean, one of the things about family law, it's very nice, you see all kinds of situations that are humorous or absurd. You know, laugh like mad. You know, when you're in, I have you know, a lot of humor in my practice. A clients approach this. I always tell people to approach their cases with a sense of humor, that the same sense of humor that got them through their life up to them is also up to then, is also good in a family law case. It helps give you perspective and it helps to diminish fear. Like, for example, I saw this one case where a mother was trying to bring an ice cream sundae to a kid who was with the father. And the father didn't want the kid to have the ice cream sundae. He only wanted the kid to eat what he was providing. So they wound up calling the police. You know, there was criminal charges filed. They each filed for protective orders. It was a whole big brouhaha. And all the father had to do was say, yeah, sure, he wants an ice cream sundae. Fine with me. You know? Mm-hmm. That's an example of how absurd things get.
I see. You've been listening to Frank Relationships with Frank Love and Dr. Gale. We've been joined by Super Attorney George Gollum, who's been educating us about matters pertaining to divorce and other separation issues. Would you tell our listeners one more time how to reach you?
Sure. My number is 443, my cell phone number, 443-653-0340, and my work number is 410-385-5261. And again, my practice is limited to the state of Maryland. Please do not construe anything that I've said as legal advice for you. It's not. I'm just discussing the law in general.
We're just having fun. I must say, I've had a ball mixing it up with such an esteemed member of the bar, and I hope that you're walking away from this conversation with a heaping helping of useful information that will help you structure your relationship as one that is as loving and accepting as possible. Let us know what you thought of today's show at Facebook.com/RelationshipFLove, on Twitter at Mr., and that's M-R, Frank Love, or at our website, franklove.com. Until next time, keep rising. This is Frank Love.